listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We continue our series, Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music, with Benjamin Clogy today in just a moment. Today's episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University Chicago. You can learn more about Concordia University Chicago by visiting cuchicago.edu. Joining us today, Benjamin Clogy, church organist and musicologist and author of Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music, 1847 to 1947 from Concordia Publishing House. Benjamin, welcome back to The Coffee Hour.
Thanks for having me, Andy and Sarah.
We are enjoying this series and learning about the vocation of the cantor or the church musician, how they were formed and taught at first in Altenburg, and then we see that development of the Addison Seminary in Northern Illinois, which then brought us up to Concordia University Chicago, which it became Concordia Teachers College, Concordia University River Forest, and then Concordia University Chicago.
Yes.
And all still teaching Lutheran teachers and church musicians today.
Absolutely.
It's neat to see that. And also that pre-seminary formation for those who are going on to seminary to become pastors as well. So let's talk more about the developing vocation of the church musician. Before we dig into that, let's go back a little bit. We talked a little bit last time about Luther and what he taught about the vocation of teacher and musician or cantor. Can you revisit that for us a little bit, Luther's teaching on the vocation of teacher and church musician?
Yeah. So first of all, what is the vocation? What is a vocation? And I think as a church musician, for me, I look at my vocation as how do I work in the world? How do I witness to my neighbor? And I mean, it might be my profession. Yes, that's true. But I don't think vocation and profession are necessarily the same thing. Our vocation, how are we conduits of Christ's love? How are we witnesses? You know, this can be our profession, but it goes much beyond. And I think a church musician's, there's no time in their life when they're not church musicians. I mean, just like pastors too. You know, there's no time where they're not pastors and their vocation is lived. And so going back to the question about Luther, remember what Luther said. He said, a schoolmaster must be able to sing. Otherwise, I will not look at him. So this is pretty important. It's like a job description. If you're a teacher, you need to have facility in music. And of course, this implies a lot, which we know elsewhere through Lutheran history. This means they had to be keyboardists. They had to, in many cases, be composers themselves. They had to be able to sing, of course. And so that's one reason why we have such a great sacred music tradition in the Lutheran church, because Luther encouraged that himself. So he kind of sets the job description for the teacher, and it must involve singing and music.
What was it about the culture maybe in the Lutheran church that made music such a high priority? I mean, I know this because I grew up in the Lutheran church. I grew up around Lutheran church music. And yet, as we're talking, the immensity of it, if that's a word, is really, I'm realizing how important this was. But what was it about a Lutheran culture or religious culture at the time of Luther that made this such an important thing for music to be a high priority in education?
Yeah, and I think entire books have been written about that question. It's a very salient question, and it's a great one. And I'm not sure how to answer that other than to say, this isn't an answer, but this is kind of a more description of your question. When the immigrants came over in 1838-39, there was a number of ships, of course. And on one of the ships, the smallest one, the Amelia, as it was called, they had a whole set of band wind instruments. They had hymnals, sheet music, pianos, and even an organ that they had commissioned in Dresden. They paid $300 for it. Don't ask me how I know that. This is total useless information. But the point is, they commissioned an organ, a brand new organ that they were going to ship over because music was so important to them. And very sadly, the Amelia sank off the coast of France, didn't make it. There was great loss of life. It was a very sad situation. I detail it in the book. In fact, these early settlers were naming their children Amelia. I find several references of that in these early years. It meant that the loss of that ship meant so much to them. Not, I mean, the loss of life was the most important thing, but these instruments of culture that they brought over to continue their great worship music tradition was lost. But that shows you that they intended to continue this. And they did in the founding of the Addison Seminary. And I want to read this quotation from Friedrich Lochner. He was a founder of the LCMS. He wrote this in 1872. He wrote this in the Schulblatt, which is the journal for Addison Seminary. And I'm going to quote here. It's a really great quote. He says, "Why shouldn't the parish school teacher be the most suitable person for the office of organist in most cases? Not only is he himself a member of the church community, and not only are the offices of the church of the school teacher and the church organist branches of one and the same tree, auxiliary offices of the sacred office of the word, both serving to make the word grow hither, but it is also a principal duty of the Christian school teacher to cultivate spiritual singing among the dear youth and to promote congregational singing to the flock of children entrusted to him. In what better hands, therefore, could the instrument of the church be than in which a called servant of the church in the most important of her branches, that the same with sufficient talent and formation is also a man after the heart of God, filled with the Spirit, who enlightens the church, heals it, and receives it with Jesus Christ in the right, unified faith, and who is a master and master of her praise and song," unquote. I think this quotation from Lochner really shows the high vocation that they viewed the church musician and the teacher. This was not, the music was not an appendage to the liturgy, and teaching music was not an appendage to what a teacher did. It was integral to both things. So it's very important that it be taught faithfully and well and thoroughly.
You mentioned Lochner. Tell us about Lochner. Who was this teacher?
Yeah, he was a very interesting fellow. Many books have been written about him, but few in terms of his contribution to liturgy. He actually wrote a book, 1895, called Der Hauptgottesdienst, which was basically an explication of the divine service. He did so much, but he was for many years at Trinity, Milwaukee, the great church that burned a few years ago and is being marvelously restored now. He is very interesting. I go through this story in my book. He had a church musician named Christian Dietz in the 1850s at Trinity, Milwaukee. And this is about the time they decided, Walter had decided in a few years before, that Trinity St. Louis would sing not only the pure Lutheran hymns, but they would sing them to the proper rhythm. That is to say, the isometric, the rhythmic meters rather than the isometric. So we have "A mighty fortress is our God." That's called isometer, the same meter. "A mighty fortress is our God." That's the rhythmic version. So Walter promoted the singing of the rhythmic versions. And Lochner, I bring this up in context of Lochner, because Lochner and his church musician, they just did the greatest thing in the 1850s at Trinity, Milwaukee. They decided that they were going to introduce this new way of singing, which of course is the original way of singing. This is how Luther composed his hymns that way. They were very rhythmic. But as with many congregations then as now, they weren't really into changing. They liked the way they did it. And so the pastor and musician had to be very clever. And they both introduced the new hymns, the old hymns, that is, the old way of singing, new to the congregation, in very devious ways. You know, they would introduce one here and there, have the children sing a verse very slowly. It took years, and they were both very frustrated. But Lochner was very patient. He had the utmost pastoral spirit, and he worked so well with his church musician that eventually the whole congregation decided they were going to sing only the real hymns, the rhythmic way, because that was the Lutheran way of doing it. And you know, Trinity Milwaukee was an exemplar of how to sing hymns throughout the 19th century and into the 20th century, arguably. But and Lochner not only was into hymnody, but he was a great visual artist too. At the Concordia Historical Institute in St. Louis, I ran across a number of his watercolors of Trinity St. Louis, Trinity Milwaukee, random scenes of a guy floating in a balloon. I mean, it's just amazing. This Lochner was quite a multi-talented individual, and there's more to him in my book than I can possibly relate now, but he was just a wonderful character.
We're talking with Benjamin Kaloji, church organist and musicologist, on his new book, Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music, available now from CPH. We have more to talk about. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University Chicago. I'm thrilled to announce the Prepared to Serve Church Professional Guarantee. Any new student in one of CUC's six churchwork programs will pay no more than $5,000 in annual tuition and required fees guaranteed. Prepared to Serve is a donor-funded initiative. Support future churchwork students by becoming a funding partner at cuchicago.edu/prepared-to-serve. Concordia University Chicago. With Christ at the center, we stand tall for the church.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
We're talking with Benjamin Kaloji, church organist and musicologist, on his new book, Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music, 1847 to 1947, available from Concordia Publishing House. And today we're talking about the developing vocation of the church musician in this early part of the LCMS. And we're talking about Lochner and Trinity in Milwaukee. And it just got me thinking about the state of the lives of church musicians at this time in the Synod. In the late 1800s, mid to late 1800s, you know, a lot of these churches were still, they weren't all that glorious and grand yet. There were a few, but a lot of, you know, churches on the frontier and these things kind of happening. What was that life like for church musicians coming out of Addison Seminary, being trained in all of these, you know, keyboard and violin and all of these different ways of leading a church in song? What was that life like for these church musicians across the Synod at this point?
That's a good question. And that was a question that I tried to explore in my book. You answer it by understanding that the daily life of your average church musician, say in a rural context, nobody's writing about it, much less themselves. It's very hard to ascertain what was actually going on. Now, in the big cities, you know, Trinity, Milwaukee, Trinity, St. Louis, we have vast records of what was going on, what was being sung, what was being taught, how they were doing it, how many teachers, what their life was like. But you know, down here in Texas or in Missouri, it's very hard to ascertain because people only write down things that are interesting to them. They don't write down generally their daily life, but we can extrapolate quite a bit. They were busy teaching 5 days a week. They had the organist teacher had to prepare, choose the hymn tunes on Saturdays. We haven't talked about this yet, but the organist also had to play not necessarily long, they were shortening through the centuries, interludes between verses. They had to play preludes and postludes. They had to do all manner of musical preparation, which must have made their lives incredibly difficult. They were paid very poorly. Pastors were paid very poorly too. So, you know, the teacher isn't making as much as the pastor is. And so they're both professions that they're not very lucrative. And it made me have great respect for the fellows, the men, because at this time it was the men who made this choice to go to seminary at the Addison Seminary and become teachers. There was really very little glory and honor in it. It was like Bach wrote in his manuscripts, Sola Deo Gloria. It was all to the glory of God. It was very few of them emerged. And one of the reasons for writing this book was to shed a little bit of light on some of these fellows and perhaps to extrapolate what life was like for the many unnamed cantors, musicians that we just don't know about. That's a fascinating question.
How did the teacher, the church musician, even the pastors stay connected during this era? I mean, I think of today, we have all forms of media and ways to stay connected to continue our education as well. We don't necessarily have to even leave our homes to continue education. How did the teacher and the pastor, the church workers, how did they stay connected and stay informed? How did they keep the saw sharp, I guess, you know?
Right. And the Addison Seminary published what was called Das Evangelische Schulblatt, the school paper is what it literally means. And originally this was published quite frequently, a couple times a month. Eventually, in the 20th century, this became a Lutheran school journal, or a Lutheran education. I recently found out that it just recently has gone out of print. Well, it hasn't been in print for a while, but it's gone defunct. But it started in 1864. And the Schulblatt, in the early years, it was sent to every graduate of Addison, which covered most of the teachers in the LCMS. And so the main professors, including Carl Brower, who was the professor of music at Addison, the first music professor in the LCMS, they would write long articles about what congregations should be singing, why you should be singing the Lutheran chorales, why your church should adopt Walther's hymnal of 1847, how you should play the organ. In my book, I translate a number of very humorous articles. Well, I don't think they were meant to be humorous, but I take them as humorous. You know, the Germans have all sorts of metaphors for things. You know, the organist plays faster than 1,000 birds going. You know, they had very colorful metaphors, but organists had to play the right tempo. You couldn't play the same prelude over and over from week to week. And it was very fascinating. And in the Schulblatt, eventually they were released fewer and fewer because you had other publications that developed alongside this. But originally this was the only one for teachers and pastors too, presumably. But they would kind of tell church musicians, give them an idea of what their job should be. Because once they graduated from Addison, it was hard to find a connection to others, especially if you were out in the country. If you were in the city, it was fine, but out in the country, you couldn't. So the Schulblatt was your only connection. It was the internet, you know, your email mailing list. That was what they got, and it was quite effective. If you read the sort of things they were advocating in terms of church music, what the organist played and how they play, it was rather successful.
This reminds me a lot of just some of the research I've done with the Walther League, the kind of journals that were sent out around this time for just a Lutheran culture among young people. And it's so interesting to hear, you know, I mean, obviously they didn't have the internet back then, but they still were using the technology that they had to stay connected and to share this Lutheran culture, because the Synod was still very young at this point.
Right.
So bringing people together and trying to unify worship and practice and all of these things among all these immigrant groups. It's just very interesting how those efforts were made at that point to bring people together and to get everyone into this church body. We have like conferences and continuing education nowadays. Was anything like that even, did anything like that exist at that point? Or was it pretty much you graduate, you're in your parish and
go to it.
Yeah, and that's about it.
Yeah, and in fact, I talk about in my book the idea of conferences that came up in the late 19th century, but it was just never practical. There was a couple, but what the Schulblatt did was suggested music you could play and where you could buy the music. you know, that was as close of a connection as, because if you think about what do organists and musicians do in conferences? Well, they talk about the music they should buy and they get mm-hmm. ideas from others. Yeah. Well, there really wasn't that. There were not conferences. So the Schulblatt functioned as a conference. You know, these other musicians are using this book, which you can buy on this street in Chicago, or you can buy from this music seller in St. Louis. Of course, good luck getting there. but the Schulblatt served that purpose as well, connecting. It was a connection of church musicians too.
We've spoken quite a bit about the formation of teachers at Addison Seminary in Illinois, and we've referenced the professors there. Who were the professors at Addison Seminary, and how did they come to these positions?
Yeah, so we talked about Carl Brower, who was the first music professor in the LCMS. He was the first one there. He retired 1897, and a fellow by the name of Albert Keppel came. And I have a quotation when Keppel was installed at Addison. It was just a few years before it moved to Chicago, remember. But when Keppel was installed, this is what the preacher said, quote, "How important, therefore, is every instruction in catechism, biblical history, as well as listening to the hymns of our Gesangbuch. For there the teacher brings the children to Jesus, leading them to the green pastures of the Word of God. And it is not an insignificant office to which you, dear brother, have been called. Above all, a teacher must take the office of church music in the right spirit. You should try to bring the students entrusted to you as far as possible so that they are not only able to accompany the congregational singing on the organ, but also to bring love for church music and especially for the chorales of our church. Our church is rightly called a singing one. Although the sermon is the main part of the service, congregational singing takes an important second place, and rightly so. Where else is there a church that has such beautiful, sweet songs as our Lutheran church? But what good are they to the people if they don't know the melodies and can't sing? But if they are to learn it, the children must be trained in singing school." So Keppel's job was to teach teachers how to teach the chorales to their students. This was important. Keppel was followed by someone named Martin Lochner, who was Friedrich Lochner's son, actually, and in the 30s and 40s. By this time, Addison had become Concordia Teachers College in River Forest. But when Lochner was called, he was actually called in 1912, this is what the Addison officials wrote in his call documents. They said, quote, "It will therefore be your task not only to train our future teachers to be capable and dexterous organists, but also to guide them in the paths of the noble, dignified, ancient Lutheran church music, so that future organists of our church can carry out their office to the glory of the Most High. We do not need to tell you how important this is, dear professor." So that takes us to Lochner dies in 1944, which is... So there's this long legacy. And I should say, too, that Concordia Chicago had a fire in 1914, I believe it was. And so many of the records for Addison were lost. So we don't have a record of the complete students who studied there, graduated. It's quite a loss. You're kind of having to put things together with less information. So tradition of teaching church music continued well into the 20th century and continues now, as it's now known as Concordia Chicago.
Talking about teaching congregations music and I don't know, a bit of shame if like you don't know the tune that you're supposed to sing a hymn to. What was the role of memorization, or how did these church musicians teach congregations to make sure that they actually did know what they were singing on a Sunday morning or throughout the week with their families? How did these cantors, you know, have this rhythm of church music?
Well, I think Lutheran families, they were generally educated, and I think they also saw the value in teaching chorales and hymns in general. And so I think maybe in comparison to these days, the cantor might have had a little easier job in family cooperation. Maybe that's not a fair statement, because you know, you had families on the farm who were working from day to night and didn't ostensibly have time for teaching, but they really, the cantors and pastors really cultivated a close connection between the family and the school and the church. So I think they, the cantors taught the hymns the way they should be sung during the week. And then I think there was a great component of children singing that at home and thereby teaching their families. I mean, a good children's choir director, I mean, that's what you do. You teach your children what you want your congregation to learn, what you think would be valuable to them. And in this instance, it works for teaching the hymns. I should bring up that C.F.W. Walter, before the formation of the Missouri Synod in 1847, this would be in the early 1840s at Trinity in St. Louis, when he was trying to teach so that everybody would sing the same way, all these immigrant groups would sing the same way, before they had a unified hymnal, he would have Singstunde, which was, I think they were Tuesday nights and Thursday nights, they would, at 8 o'clock, you would gather at the church and you would just sing the hymns the proper way with the rhythmic tunes. And that was one way of doing it. I don't find a lot of references to that, specifically called meetings to teach hymns or singing, which makes me think that that was even more important. The weekday teaching in the school was even more important and successful once these schools promulgated through the land.
We'll talk more about C.F.W. Walther in our next conversation. Our guest today, Benjamin Kaloji, church organist and musicologist and author of Portraits in American Lutheran Sacred Music from Concordia Publishing House. You can find it at cph.org. Benjamin, thank you so much for spending this time with us today and looking forward to our next conversation.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.